So I wanted to talk this morning about a subject that is surprisingly not mentioned very much in today's spiritual literature. It's been kind of sidelined. And yet it is really what this path is all about. And I would like to begin by reading from Daughter of Fire when Mrs. Tweedy met Bysop. "Why did you come to me?" he asked, quietly breaking the silence. I looked at him. The beads in his right hand were resting on the arm support of the chair. And all at once, as if waiting for this very question, I felt a sudden irresistible desire to speak, an urgency to tell him everything, absolutely, about myself, my longing, my aspiration, all my life. It was like a compulsion. I began to speak and talked for a long time. I told him that I wanted God, was searching after truth. I went on and on and on. He kept nodding slowly, as if the torrent of my words was a confirmation of his own thoughts, looking at me, no, rather through me, with those strange eyes of his, as if to search out the very intimate, the very hidden corners of my mind. "I want God," I heard myself saying, "but not the Christian idea of an anthropomorphic deity sitting somewhere, possibly on a cloud surrounded by angels with harps. I want the rootless root, the causeless cause of the Upanishads. Nothing less than that." And that was the answer to the most important question that is asked when somebody comes to the teacher, when the teacher says, "Why did you come?" Or it's sometimes said, "What do you want?" And what Mrs. Tweedy responded is, "I want the absolute truth, the rootless root, the causeless cause, God, however you call it, but not an image, not an idea." She didn't just want love. She didn't want to be accepted. She didn't want peace. She wanted absolute truth, the rootless root, the causeless cause. And I felt somehow it's time to return to that core. And I just remember when I was 19 and I first went to the little room in Exeter Road where a few of us used to meet, and Mrs. Tweedy would sit under the sink meditating because there wasn't enough space in the room anywhere else. And I remember, you know, looking into those extraordinary eyes she had, those piercing blue eyes, and I remember saying to myself, "I want what she has." That's as much as I could articulate, as much as I could say, "I want what she has," because somewhere I knew that she had the truth. Not a definable truth, not a quantifiable truth, but the truth. Whatever it is that is behind, 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 within, 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 whatever it is at the root of the root. And this is what this path really has to offer. As Bysop said, we belong to Raja Yoga. Raja simply means kingly or royal, the direct road to absolute truth. And that is what this path has to offer, the direct road to absolute truth. I'm not saying it is always obtainable. I'm not saying it is always accessible. But it is the end of the road of the endless road. It is what is at the very core of everything that exists and doesn't exist, is this what is called absolute truth, not relative truth, but absolute truth. And it is, of course, completely indescribable, because the only way I've ever found to able to articulate it is it's the completely different to anything one can expect or think or understand. Even to say it is not true, because it doesn't exist and it doesn't not exist. It is completely other, and yet it is in a way the only thing that is real. And the unique quality of human beings is they have the ability, more than the angels, to access it. And the unique quality of this path is it is a direct road to absolute truth. It is there, waiting, this essential essence. When Mrs. Tweedy went to camp, that's what she was searching for, and that's what he had to offer. That is what this system, this path, has to offer. Yes, it has other unique qualities, like Bhaisabh stressed, it's the only path in which love is created. Because love is the vehicle that takes us there. This pure stream of love that comes down through the transmission. You need a power, you need an energy to realize the truth. You can't do it on your own. That's why you need a teacher, you need a source, you need a stream of energy. What we use on this path is love. And what Bhaisabh stressed is it's the only path in which love is created. If you don't have enough love inside of you, and who of us has enough love, then love is given, because that's the energy, that's the power. It's really helpful just to go back to essentials. Bhaisabh said, the desire for truth is important. It is the greatest qualification for the path, to want the truth. Mrs. Tweedy used to quote again and again to us this line from the Upanishads, if you want the truth as badly as a drowning man wants air, you will realize it in a split second. But who wants the truth as much as that? And yet it is the calling. Who am I in my realest sense? What is the core of the core of the core of my being? If you strip away everything else, and it's like peeling the layers of the onion that goes on and on and on and on. The trick, if you like, is not to get caught at one of the layers of the onion. I mean, some of those layers inside yourself are so horrible you want to leave them as quickly as possible. You know, I had a dysfunctional mother problem. I was happy to leave behind. Others are more alluring. Others are more tempting. And it is like when she used to say, if you have an experience, as long as it's you and the experience, you are not yet there. Value the experience or the dream. But remember, you are not yet there. It is still two. It is still you and the experience. You peel and you peel and you peel. And I think it's why one of our spiritual ancestors, Al-Hakim At-Tirmidhi, one of the great, great early Sufis, he said, for him, perseverance was the most important quality on the path. Because to find this thing called truth, to reach it, you have to peel and peel and peel. You uncover layers and layers of yourself. And then you discard that. That is not real. That is not real. It is amazing to discover inside yourself what is not real. All those things that you thought important, that you thought yourself, that you thought valuable, that were precious or miserable, because we have miserable parts of ourselves that are just as much an illusion as glamorous parts of ourselves. Sometimes the miserable parts of ourselves trap us more than the glamorous parts of ourselves. And to go through it piece by piece, that is not me. For many years I used to do a practice, I don't dare to do it anymore, in which I would just go to the beyond, to the beyond, to the beyond. Whatever state I was in, I would go in beyond it. I would go beyond it, beyond it. What is the beyond? What is the beyond? Then I got so far beyond, I had to be a bit careful, so I have to come back and back and back and back. But there is this thing called truth. To say I love you is easy, but to realize it is difficult. Here is the hidden mystery of the realization of God or truth. Because you have to realize one fact. You are in my heart. You are everything. I am nothing. You are in my heart. You are everything. I am nothing. Because we use love. Love has this two qualities. It is like a knife, real love, not this Hollywood mishmash, this thing called romantic love, which is a great experience, but is 99.9% projection and a little bit of love. But real love, the love the Sufis know about, the love that was, like they say, the wine before the creation of the vine, the love that comes from the source, the love that we work with. That's what's in our heart, and it has these two qualities. It is like a knife. If you really use love properly, it strips away, it strips away, it strips away. It takes illusions. It's like it's played out for me in the human drama of what we call love, because if you really love somebody, you want to be naked with them. You want to be physically naked, you want to be psychologically naked. Otherwise, what's the point? Otherwise, it's all games. And maybe some people enjoy playing those games, but if you really love somebody, you want to be your own naked self with them. You don't want to play games. You don't want to be caught in projections. You want to be physically naked, you want to be psychologically naked, and if possible, you want your soul to be seen. You want the very root of yourself to be seen. And if that is true on the human drama of love, how much more it is with the divine drama of love, which is what we work with, because the beloved is inside your heart, just like the teacher is inside your heart. And you are naked. When you come to the teacher, you have to be naked. Just like when you come into the world, you are naked. When you come to the teacher, you have to be naked. I found it exhilarating, but it is also frightening, because what happens if you don't measure up? What happens if you are like second-rate spiritual student? In school, I was always B+. I never quite made the A stream. And what happens if spiritually it's like that? What happens if you get to the teacher, you say, no, well, you know. But remember, luckily we have the worst students but the best system. It's very good of making gold out of lead. If you stick with it, if you really, really stick with it, if you don't get caught in one of the layers of the onion, in one of the illusions of yourself, one of the patterns of projection. And love, if you really love, well, there is this saying of Al-Halaj, you know, this great Sufi he played the ultimate sacrifice of his own blood for saying, An al-Haq, I am the truth. And he said, when truth has taken hold of a heart, she empties it of all but herself. When truth has taken hold of a heart, she empties it of all but herself. At the beginning, you have this kind of dance with the path. You know, shall you, shan't you? It's like a seduction process. Something I learned from Mrs. Tweedy, and she learned from Bhaisab, how you seduce somebody. You tell them just what they want to hear and a little bit something more. And she loved to watch him. She said he was like fishermen, like a fisherman, but fisher of souls. How he would catch a fish and reel them in. And it's like a hook inside the heart. I mean, for me, in my experience, it took 5 minutes, 5 seconds. I saw Mrs. Tweedy, became piece of dust on the floor, went to tea. That was it. But some people need a little bit more encouragement. But once it's stuck, once truth has taken hold of a heart, it is an energy. We forget that. We think of it as an idea. We think, oh, absolute truth, yes. But truth is not an idea. It gets hold of you somewhere. It gets a hook inside of you like love. I think love is the most true thing there is in this world. I think that's one of the reasons one works with love. We work with love because, I mean, real love, it is true. It is real. You can't make it up. It's misunderstood, of course, a lot in our culture, but it's real. And truth is real. And truth, it gets hold of your heart and it starts this process of dismantling you. And this is why, of course, this particular path is effortless, because it does it to you. This truth, this which is real, this is the transmission, this is what one gets access to. And then there starts this whole defensive dance between you and the truth. Which is why Miss Tweedy used to say, when people said to her, would you do it again? And she said, no, for two reasons. First of all, she physically couldn't manage it. You need a lot of stamina. It is a bloody business. I have a particular grudge to bear in that I think a lot of contemporary spirituality has become sanitized. It's all too soft and sweet, and you're supposed to feel good. In none of the Sufi literature that I've read, and I can only read what's been translated into English, it doesn't mention anywhere about feeling good. I haven't come across that phrase, that you're supposed to feel good. Yes, you get bliss, you get ecstasy, but they're fairly good on the blood and the tears. And one of my favorite Sufis, Abu Sa'id ibn Abu Kahir, the great early Sufi, and he says, there has to be blood, there has to be blood. And Rumi says, too, he says, this path is not for easily broken glass bottle people. I often think, because Rumi is so popular nowadays, and it's interesting how when people read Rumi, they kind of overlook what took him to that place, because he didn't start off as a poet, he was actually a theology professor. And then he met Shams, and one look from the eye of Shams and his whole world was turned upside down. But what is generally overlooked is what took him to this place of ecstasy was this incredible sorrow. And this incredible sorrow by the fact that his beloved Shams, his teacher, his Shams, his son, the one thing he really loved in his whole life, disappeared one day, probably killed by his own son out of jealousy. I always find it interesting that which is really the core of Rumi's spiritual experience, that is what broke his heart. And the Sufis say the heart has to be broken, the heart has to be broken. There has to be blood. And it's not a sanitized process. That is what took him when he discovered then Shams was inside of him, and then from that moment. But there were years in between from when Shams vanished. The first time, of course, Shams left because his disciples and his family were so jealous of the love. And Rumi was so heartbroken, he sent his eldest son to Damascus to bring Shams back. And then Shams stayed not very long. And then one evening he went out for a walk and he never came back. And it was never written, but it was understood that he was killed possibly by Rumi's son, because Rumi never went to his funeral. That's the heart broke, that's the blood. So, you know, Mrs. Tweedy said she wouldn't do it again because she was too old, because there is a price to pay. It is the most demanding thing you can ever do. That's why the Sufis say, keep away from the lane of love. It's not popular. It's not easygoing. It is very brutal. There's a price to be paid. And then she said, also because she'd just say yes. She wouldn't fight him. There are two stories in the book. Generally, you just read one, which is Tweedy's story, which is somehow her fighting Bicep. She said later, it was so ridiculous. This middle-aged Western woman fighting this great teacher. He was like a swordsman, and she was always like a sword fight, always going back, always going back. And the other side, of course, which is that throughout this whole process, there is his great love for her. After each time when Mrs. Tweedy had a big fight with him, he would be quite sick, because he took all her darkness and all of her anger onto himself and transmuted it. This is the battle with the truth, because he lived from that place of truth, real truth, that is played out. And you can't escape from it at any time, because it has to do with surrender. In the end, you have to bow down and surrender before the truth. When truth has taken hold of a heart, she empties it of all but herself. Everything has to go. Not initially, I think 20 years is kind of, it's a good time. I always think the first 10 years you spend sorting yourself out. You slowly, during that time, you align yourself with the path, with the energy of truth, with the love. You align it. And then you just have to stick with it. And I think from, everybody is unique, of course, but in my experience, the early years are the most exciting, because you've actually got something tangible to work on. You can actually transform yourself. You change, you bring light into the darkness, you discover parts of yourself you didn't know you had. The psychological transformation and spiritual transformation, you learn to meditate, you learn to have access to a certain light. Your horizons expand. Life has more color, it has more vibrancy as the inner world comes into the outer. You learn to appreciate things in a different way. You see differently. You actually, you see more light. In thy light shall we see light. You begin to wake up. And you feel you are achieving something. And this is a really very, very dynamic time. And then afterwards, the next 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know, can be longer, which is the time of almost of just perseverance, because you no longer have dreams. I remember somebody came recently to our group in California from South Africa, and I remembered when she first started coming to the group, she would write to me these amazing dreams, and visions, dreams, one after the other. And I said to her, "You're going to share a dream?" She says, "Oh, I don't have those dreams anymore. They're a thing of the past." And then it's really, this is for me the most testing time, because are you just going to do it with no result, with nothing coming back? Just to stick with it, just to persevere, just to not want anything for yourself. At the beginning, you get something for yourself. You discover who you are, you get to know yourself, you get love. That's amazing. You get loved. I grew up in a family that didn't know what love was, didn't even hear the word. And suddenly there was this love. You have experiences in meditation. You are loved, or you feel loved by the teacher. There is love. And then there comes the time of the desert, which can last for years. And are you just going to stick with it, wanting nothing? Last night, my teacher taught me the lesson of poverty, having nothing and wanting nothing. You still want the truth. Even if it seems like a distant memory, like it seems something impossible. You want God, whatever God is, because really God and the truth, they are the same. I think it's easier sometimes to use the word truth, because God you can personalize. And for the Sufis, it's the beloved, and it can become personal. It is personal. Tremendously personal, but there's this other aspect that is completely impersonal. The truth, the absolute truth. This path is a royal road to truth. And then you just have to stick with it, day after day, week after week, meditate, practice the remembrance, keep your attention focused on the goal. That's why one of the principles of the path is the journey homeward. You are going home, you are traveling from a world of illusion to a world of reality. Just to keep your attention. Then you get disillusioned, you get sidetracked, you get, oh, maybe a relationship is more important, maybe this, maybe I need a house, maybe. Lead us not into temptation. That's in the Lord's Prayer. Lead us not into temptation. How we are led into temptation. Emotional illusions, physical illusions, spiritual illusions, they are numberless, and we each have our own personal preference. And just to stick with it, just to do the practices, just to keep focused, to keep the inner attention focused. This is what matters. Yes, I have all my worldly responsibilities. I have to have my feet on the ground. By this time, you've got a bit older. It's been 10, 12, 15 years or something on the path. You probably have family, you have responsibilities, you have a job, and you just have to do all of that and know that the real goal, the real attention is on something else. Something mysterious, something you can't name, something that you don't even know what it is. But there is this deep calling within the heart for something real. Everything else is like second-hand. Why listen to second-hand reports when you can hear the Beloved speak himself? And just to keep the attention, this is really why I am here, this is what matters, day after day, week after week. When you get no feedback, you get no results anymore. And while this is going on, somebody is watching you, because this is how this path works. I have to watch all of you, all the time, individually. Otherwise it doesn't work. And you are watched. Is this person still sincere? And suddenly I feel somebody drifting off. Oh, what are they doing? Where are they? And if they drift off too far, I start to forget them. I'm always intrigued by that. They're no longer present in my consciousness. Or I begin to see a sort of mist around them. I think, oh no, what are they doing? I don't say anything unless it gets almost to the point of them losing the path. And then, because if you knew how precious it is, you can wait for lifetimes for an opportunity. This might not come for lifetimes again. An opportunity to go from here to there. It's like when I saw Mrs. Tweedy at the very beginning and I looked in her eyes. And she had what I wanted. I remember years later when she lived with us in Tynmouth Road, and she didn't have a telephone, and me and the Nat used to take the telephone messages for her, and every morning at 9 o'clock I would go down and ring on her door and to give her the agenda for the day, to the messages or whatever. And she said she trained herself to come out of meditation when the doorbell rang. Otherwise, the house could come down and she wouldn't come out of meditation. But I must have been there a little bit early, or she must have been a little bit somewhere else, because I opened the door, and I was young those days. I was a young father and school teacher. And she opened the door and she was still in meditation. And her eyes were completely inhuman. Completely inhuman. It was absolutely terrifying. And then I watched as she came back, as the eyes came back into human, and suddenly there was Mrs. Tweedy there, and she said, good morning, and I said, good morning. But that initial experience, when it was a completely other, completely inhuman reality that she had been in and she was still in, because it was absolutely terrifying. There was no person there. It was a completely other reality. And this is always haunting this other reality, this, I call it now the further shores of love. It is another reality that is present here, that is actually underneath it all, it's the only thing that's present here. It's the only thing that's actually real. Everything else is not real. And it's the one thing we can't see and the one thing we have to make every effort and a lifetime's effort to realize. This is part of the great human drama. I want to find out what's really here. What is actually true? First of all, what is true within myself and then deeper than myself, because it's beyond oneself. What is this thing called truth? What is the root of the root? What is actually underneath it all? And you need a lot of courage to do this. Just like you're not what you think you are, and that's a kind of easy game to play at the beginning. You know, you discover you're not what your parents said you were, and you discover you're something completely different, and then you've got to live it. And then you find underneath it goes even further. Everything is not what they say it is. And then there's that horrifying moment when you realize nothing is real. If you're not held by a teacher at that time, it can make you completely crazy. Nothing is real. And then you walk this narrow, narrow, narrow bridge. The path of love is like a bridge of hair across a chasm of fire. In my flat here in London, I have a Japanese picture of the three blind men leading each other across the bamboo bridge over a chasm. One blind man just leading the other blind man. And it always reminds me there is this narrow, narrow bridge from here to there. There comes a time when you are taken from here to there, and then you are rooted in something else so completely that you can't lose it. There is no way back. You are rooted in something else. You are rooted in something that's real. But there is this kind of halfway moment when the one world seems to be getting further away and the other world is not quite near. It's like that moment in a love affair when you give yourself completely to another person and you're not quite sure if they're going to reciprocate. But you just feel you just have to give yourself. You just have to open your heart and say, whatever comes, comes. Whatever happens, happens. And it is the same. You don't realize, of course, you were actually held very carefully the whole time, because truth is a very dangerous business. Most people's illusions are so precious to them that you have to be very careful with the truth. There comes a point when you don't care what is destroyed. You've been humiliated so much that you just don't care. Anybody can say anything. What does it matter? You don't have a self-image left to value. And then there is this other reality which you can call truth. And on this path, the way to it is through love, when truth has taken hold of the heart. It works through the heart. I think it is a wonderful way to go to truth, is through love. There are other ways, through power, for example, which is a very dangerous journey. But love works this magic within a human being. Love turns everything, changes everything. It is really a wonderful way to make this journey to truth. On this path, you begin to get lost in love. You get taken into truth through being lost in love. You lose yourself. You get bewildered, you get confused. Love does strange things, and then you don't care anymore. I think Mirabai, this Indian mystic, she talks about being shameless in the bazaar. You'd sell yourself. You don't care. You don't matter to yourself. I mean, it's a crazy undertaking. Everybody says you can't do it. There is no way to reach reality. You can't get there. It's impossible. I guess that's why people don't talk about it very much anymore, because it's kind of a bit old-fashioned. And but it's the root. It's why one is here. If you're not here to discover the truth, why begin spiritual life? Why? Maybe you. I guess you want some love, or you want some light, or be a better person. Those are all good reasons, but there's this kind of pride, there is this dignity. I want the rootless root, the causeless cause. I want what's real in a world of illusion. I want to go home. I want to go back to the truth from which I came. And this is a path where you can live it. This is the direct road to absolute truth. And as Bhaisav said, the goal of men is to realize the truth. This is the purpose of the whole of creation. It is the final moment, final song of creation. It is like the heartbeat of creation. This is the goal of creation. This is the pinnacle of creation, is the human being's desire for truth. And maybe if for some of us this is our last life. Like, find the truth here. They say you can't reach it elsewhere. This is part of the paradox of this physical world that is so dense, particularly now at this time, that is so full of distractions, so full of illusions, and yet it is also where you can realize the truth. And this is a path that has this at its core, the beat of this drum. This is the heartbeat of the path. This is why Mrs. Tweedy went to India. That's why this path came back to the West. That's why I started. Why did you come to me? He asked her. She came for the truth. Exactly the same reason that when I saw Mrs. Tweedy, I wanted what she had. I looked in her eyes. I knew she had it. I couldn't name it. Nobody had ever mentioned it to me before, but it was real, and I wanted it more than anything I'd ever wanted, anything in my life. And I knew I would do anything for it. Because it mattered, because it was real, because all those reasons, because I just wanted it. It's the most primal desire, passion. What is real? What is the truth? What is this all about? So just remember that, take it into your meditation, take it into your practice. This is the core of this path. It's a direct road to absolute truth. It's so easy to get distracted emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, into the 10,000 things. But to return to the heart, to return to that calling within the heart, to return to that heartbeat of the soul, then you are true to something. And we live in a world of so much untruth and distortion upon distortion and half-truth. And this is true, this is real, this is this tradition, this is what is here. And it's because you want it. Remember, under everything, that is what is true, that is what is present, that is what this path is about. It is a royal road to absolute truth. And you go back to it, and you go back to that hunger inside of you for what is real. That stamp in your own heart, because it is stamped into your heart.